Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
He's a megalomaniac. He's a narcissistic sociopath, and we're going to see just more abuse of power. And the question is, when does it stop?
Hello, everyone. Welcome to George Conway Explains It All to Sarah Longwell. He's George Conway. I am not Sarah Longwell. I'm her best friend, JVL. George, my friend, final show of the summer, probably, unless there's an emergency which requires us jumping on to tape something because something absolutely batshit insane has happened. And really,
which could be tomorrow.
What are the chances that that will happen?
You know, it's very calm. Donald Trump is just going to play golf quietly and keep his mouth shut for the rest of the summer about everything except Epstein. Got to talk about Epstein.
So we're going to have a real grown-up conversation about legal ethics and censure and disbarment and all that. But we have to put that aside and start with Jeffrey Epstein. So Todd Blanche, is that his name? Am I pronouncing his name correctly?
Blanche, yes.
Ghislaine.
I don't know what it is. Ghislaine is supposed to be French.
They met seemingly without anybody else present.
Well, I think Ghislaine's attorneys were there.
Yes, he was there.
Was he there? I don't know whether there were other Department of Justice attorneys there. I don't know.
But they seem not to have taken any notes about the meetings. I just have so many questions about this. Beginning with, is it common for the government to show up with just one guy and not to take notes? Or,
well, look, I mean, it would be very unusual for that to happen. I mean, I am not a former prosecutor. I was interviewed by the FBI once or twice in connection with the Monica Lewinsky thing, the Linda Tripp thing, and they don't seem to want to travel alone. There's always...
Sure.
There was somebody from the Office of the Independent Counsel, and then at least two FBI agents, and they take copious notes. And then I'm sure somewhere, I probably could request it, is an FBI 302, which is what they call their memos to the file of their interviews of witnesses, which is basically very standard for them. So I don't know who was there. I saw a photograph of lawyers supposedly in Florida, including Todd Blanche, who are going to meet with Ghislaine. I saw three people. I don't know who they were. I don't know how many actually got into, maybe you've seen more precise press reports, but I don't actually see how many people were actually in there with her. But the whole thing was highly unusual to start.
That notion irregular.
It was irregular. The notion that a deputy attorney general who knows nothing about the case, assisted by no one who conducted any form of investigation of the case, including the woman they fired,
right.
Maureen Comey, whose name you might recognize. It's just highly unusual for that to happen. And if there were no note takers, and I'm not saying that there were no note takers, but if there were no FBI agents, that usually you have an FBI agent there. And because they are the people who write down these things when you interview witnesses and you're a federal prosecutor. So it would be highly irregular. And of course, it would be highly irregular if you were actually conducting a legitimate Department of Justice investigation into something, as opposed to trying to make sure that your orange boss isn't embarrassed because he hung out with a sex predator years ago.
George, you remember
that would kind of be a different approach, I think, somebody might take.
You remember from the first Trump administration. There's a scene in one of the many reports, I forget which one it was, where Trump is yelling at, I think it's Don McGahn. And he's like, why are you taking all these notes? I've never been with a lawyer who takes notes. And McGahn's response is like, that's because you only ever dealt with mob lawyers or something like that. Like
it's a- I don't remember when McGahn spoke, but yeah, but basically he's like, Roy Cohn never took notes.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, lawyers take notes. They take copious notes. We always take notes. Sometimes it's a bad idea to take notes. Because if you write something down the wrong way and your notes are later produced because they, for some reason, they might not be held to be privileged, you know, it may come out the wrong way. But the reason why we write stuff down is because we want to make sure it's accurate and we want to make sure the witness's testimony is consistent with the facts or the, what the, we expect the witness to say. And, you know, we have to do that in part because we don't want to be presenting perjured testimony to a court, for example. That's one of the many, many reasons. Secondly, we want to remember. We don't want to put the witness through having to ask the same questions two or three times, which we probably do anyway. We want to write stuff down and we want to remember it. And that's what you usually do when you're not afraid that you're doing something that's wrong.
You know, George, I seem to remember a scene with Emile Bove, who we will speak, Bove, all these names. It's so hard to figure out.
Bove.
We're in a meeting with about the Eric Adams prosecution, where he demanded that the notes that his attorneys had taken during their meeting with him be collected and destroyed. So it does seem like,
and there's, I guess, a pattern.
This is a genuine question. How controversial is note taking in the legal world? Because it seems like the kind of thing that should be normal and accepted.
It is extremely normal. We take notes when we even aren't necessary to, when it's not necessary to take notes. It's a habit. And it's a habit because we want to actually remember what people said accurately because it may be of some importance. And normally we're not talking about things that we want to cover up. And normally our conversations are privileged anyway. So if we hear something bad, no one's going to see the light of day if it's with a client. But of course, in the situation where there's adversity, you've got Eric Adams on one side, his attorneys with him, and then the government on the other. You know, there's not necessarily a privilege there. It might be a settlement privilege of some sort, but definitely not an attorney-client privilege. And the only reason why you would want to have someone stop taking notes or to collect the other side's notes, which I don't know why you would do that, because if you did that and then destroyed it, you might be destroying evidence of some sort that might be relevant to a future inquiry, and that could get you into trouble. But normally you don't get censored. People take notes. It's just accepted that somebody's got a notepad and that you have to remember that what you said somebody might write down. They may not write it down correctly. They could write it down incorrectly. That's why you have your own note taker. And both sides have their notes. And you know,
so this
that's
is
the way it works.
Look, I'm just relying on TV law. And television law is not real law. But I do feel like I saw a TV show once on HBO in which one of the characters explained that there is a particular circumstance in which you don't take notes.
Yeah,
that is in a criminal fucking
the Wire,
conspiracy.
Right? The famous clip from The Wire when he said, what you doing? And then there was a N-word or something. You taking notes on a criminal fucking conspiracy?
Yeah.
So what you doing? And he takes the notes away. It's a very famous, scene. It's
Tell me what is going to happen with Maxwell. Is this the beginning of a deal of some sort? Because it's what it kind of looks like to me. It kind of makes sense.
I'm agnostic on that. I don't know. I think there is some thought that she might be useful if she says something like, Donald Trump never saw a naked girl and he didn't know anything about Jeffrey's activities and they simply played bingo occasionally and never on Epstein Island. I mean, maybe they think they can get something from her that basically denies any improper or even possible knowledge of improper conduct on behalf of Trump. Problem with that is she's a liar. She was charged with perjury. She apparently just lied her ass off during one of the early civil depositions again, in a civil case that a victim had brought against Epstein. And the government, in its sentencing memorandum after her trial, basically said that she can't be trusted. And that should be considered as an adverse factor in weighing what sentence to give her. And she got a pretty substantial sentence. So the problem is, if they trot her out, give her some kind of a pass, could be full clemency, could be a commutation, could be something else, who knows. It's going to look like they bought her off to say something helpful for Donald Trump, to avoid producing these documents, which have God knows what in them, and he seems to be very, very sensitive about them. So I think that may be the thinking, and I think that may be somebody's idea just to see, like, is that possible? Could we get something for her? And then you'd weigh the costs and benefits to Trump of releasing, not the cost of benefits to the people, cost and benefits to the people of the United States of America, who pay the tax dollars, that pay the salaries of the Justice Department lawyers and the prisons and the whatnot, and even Donald Trump, although not his plane, only the renovations to the plane. You don't know. You don't know what is in those documents, and it looks like it's just part of an extended cover-up of what's in the documents. And frankly, I've talked to some people who would never say this publicly, right? Because it would be appalling. It would absolutely be appalling, morally objectionable, legally objectionable, and horrible from the standpoint of the many, many victims. Okay, four testified at the trial of Maxwell. There were hundreds more. There were over 1,000 of these young girls who were abused by Maxwell and Epstein. But there's a line of thought saying, oh, please let him fucking do this, okay? Because we'll crucify him. We will crucify him. So I think it's a lose-lose proposition for him. And, I mean, they have made so many mistakes. The one thing that you can point to in this whole episode is just the unbelievable stupidity from beginning to end, from bottom to the top of this crew. I mean, for example, one, the whole thing about promising to release files that they had not looked at. Okay? It doesn't matter what the subject is about, right? It doesn't matter whether it's about a sex case. It doesn't matter whether it might implicate Donald Trump. It doesn't matter what the subject is. You don't go out and say, we're going to release all the documents when you haven't freaking looked at them. All right? There are apparently 100,000 pages worth of documents and videos and whatnot. And it took them an enormous number of people that they had to dragoon from the FBI to look through this stuff. But they promised to produce this stuff. I get doing this during the campaign and doing it in 2024, 2023, that's one thing. It's all political bullshit. But when you actually get into the government and you have to actually bear responsibility for what the hell you put out there and whether or not the people's rights are involved, whether or not false accusations might be put out there and whether or not victims might be harmed, it's like you don't promise that stuff. You say, we're going to look very careful about it. We want to be as transparent as possible. And if we can produce materials, we'll produce as much as we can. But again, it's going to take some time to do that. Instead, they send out these binders. They do this whole shtick at the White House where everybody's carrying, oh, I've got my first Epstein binder. You know, they did it for television. Okay, that's point one. Point two is, you especially don't want to do that, putting stuff out there when, like, your boss might be in the files, right? You don't promise to you have to be brain dead not to know that Donald Trump might be in those documents. You have to be brain dead. He deserves to have whatever's in there dumped out there. But if you're working for him, you're a moron if you promise to produce this stuff. Then, third, they actually then realize, holy shit, there's shit in here about him. We don't want to see the light of day, they tell him. And then they announce, sorry, we can't produce any of the documents, which is fine. right? That was the first smart thing they did, right? And they have good reasons not to produce this stuff, apart from, I mean, let's leave apart the selfish motive, the Trumpian motive. You know, this stuff is, it's raw material. You don't normally put this stuff out there, right? So there is kind of a legitimate reason. But the problem was they couldn't take the, they were going to take a hit for that. And one of the functions that an attorney general, a cabinet member, a sub-cabinet member serves in any administration, whether criminal like this administration or relatively honest like any most other administrations, not perfectly so, none are, is you have the minions take the fall for the boss, for the president.
Sure.
Okay? That happens in any administration. And so what Trump then should have done was kept his mouth shut and said, well, I mean, I would have been happy to see these produced, but the attorney general has made her legal assessment, and the FBI or the, you know, the DOJ has done that, and, you know, talk to them. That's it. Yeah, I knew Jeffrey Epstein, but, you know,
yeah,
nothing of it. That's it. Instead, he goes into saying, oh, why are you still talking about Jeffrey Epstein? Which is just lame-brained. And then he goes worse. He starts talking himself about Jeffrey Epstein repeatedly. After saying, why does anybody care about Jeffrey Epstein? He can't stop talking about Jeffrey Epstein, about why he threw Jeffrey Epstein out of Mar-a-Lago. Was it because there've been like three different stories about why that was? And then now he's talking about the fact that he knew that Ghislaine Maxwell stole, he says, a 17-year-old girl who later committed suicide because she had been so abused and so suffered because of this whole thing, and testified at Ghislaine Maxwell's trial, Virginia Roberts Jiffra, and he talks about it on consecutive days. He doesn't have to do that. It's stupid. Secondly, it's like, you know, he just could take the position, I'm the president of the United States, I'm busy. And he is busy, to his credit, he is busy, right? He's busy randomly imposing tariffs on nations of the world for illegitimate reasons and nonsensical reasons and cutting bullshit deals with nations after threatening them. He's busy doing that. He's got a big crypto operation going on. He's selling cologne. He's got to play golf every day. He opened a new golf course out in Turnberry, which was broadcast live on government TV. On the White House website. That's a first. I mean, he's a busy, busy guy, right?
Yeah.
So he should just say, I'm busy. I don't know what's going on with those files. Why do you keep asking? Go ask Pam Bondi. And that's the normal thing for a White House to do, even under normal circumstances of something that doesn't involve potential sleaziness on the part of the president, is like, oh, please ask the Secretary of Bullshit about this.
All right,
last
Maxwell question before
me. Last Maxwell question.
Because I think I slightly disagree that any testimony from her is valueless. I think a straight Mr. Trump is completely honest and he never had anything to do with Jeffrey Epstein. And actually, I wrote the poem, that little story, and I did the drawing, and please give me my commutation. That is not especially useful. But if what Maxwell does is finger a bunch of bad people, like Bill Clinton and all of the deep state actors were on Jeffrey Epstein Island, and also Donald Trump is totally innocent, he was never there, and that gets a pardon, I think that is saleable to at least 40% of the country, right? You get at least 40% of the country that's going to buy that. And then you do a performative attempt at prosecution, which goes nowhere, kind of like the Obama task force, which remember the Obama strike force, which was formed 2 weeks ago to get to the heart of Barack Obama's treason and seems to have basically gone nowhere. And you just move on to the next thing, right? Because it's all he ever does is he solves the problem in front of you and move on to the next thing. So I think if it is a Maxwell is fingering the real criminals, right? The real killers, and on gives a side of, and actually Mr. Trump is totally innocent and he's been railroaded by this hoax. I think that works for him.
Problem is then they're going to want to see the documents. I think we all would want to see the documents. Still, it just, that just raises,
yeah, that's true enough.
You know, the more she puts out there, the more questions it raised. Okay, well then, you know, Bill Clinton, what's in the documents about Bill Clinton? Because there'll be a huge row about that. Clinton will deny it, and sure, you know, Democrats will go batshit, and then the Republicans or the MAGAs will say they're lying, and everybody's going to accuse each other of lying, and then we're going to go back to say, well, what's in the documents? So I just think it's just, I just think it would just throw more fuel on the fire, which is what he has been doing almost single-handedly. I mean, he's, you know, I think we all forgot about how Elon Musk juiced this up a couple months ago, right? Because he got everybody talking about it again, just, and then they kind of played into that by then making their announcement about the documents.
Yeah.
So everybody was like, huh, Elon was right. And, but he, you know, at the end of the day, the person who has kept this going more than anyone else in the last couple of weeks is Donald fucking Trump. He's such a...
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Okay, with that behind us, this week, Emile Bové was confirmed to the Third Circuit. I have a series of questions for you about this. The first of which is, are you surprised that he got confirmed? Because I got to be honest, I was slightly surprised. Not like wildly, but slightly.
No.
Because he did perjure himself to the Senate during his hearings.
Yes, in all likelihood, yes. I'm... honest to goodness, I'm not surprised.
Okay.
I would not have been surprised if he had lost a couple more votes and gotten sunk. But, you know, there, as I've said on this program many times, you'll never go bankrupt betting on the spinelessness of Republican senators.
That's true. Take the under.
You know, always.
When in doubt on Republicans,
always take the low. Under. Take the low. I mean, you're going to win 9 times out of 10.
So,
you know, I mean, that fellow who they tried to install as U.S. attorney, he was a one-off. Yeah. And they only got him because they convinced some Jewish groups in some purplish red states that he was an anti-Semite. And that was enough to move a couple of senators here and there, which is all they need. But this, you know, I mean, it's just shocking to me. And what's particularly shocking is there were like 3 or 4, I lost count, whistleblowers, right? There was Erez Rouveni, who had really had the goods on the attempt to, not the attempt, the gaslighting of Judge Boasberg here in the District of Columbia, the lying and the threats or the suggestions that they violate court orders and say, fuck the courts. And then a couple of more whistleblowers, I think, who backed up Rouveni. And then there was another whistleblower who said, essentially, who provided information to the Senate Judiciary Committee to the effect that something that Bové had said to the committee in his sworn testimony about the Eric Adams case was perjurious. I don't know precisely what that was. I don't think it was ultimately revealed as to what that was publicly, but apparently there were sworn statements or statements of some sort that were made available to the members of the committee, and essentially the Republicans didn't want to look at it. You know, hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil, I guess. Or Sergeant Schultz. Did you grow up with Sergeant Schultz?
Yeah. I remember Sergeant.
Sergeant Schultz.
I saw nothing.
I saw nothing.
Yeah, we're doing all the accents today.
And what's amazing about this is Chuck Grassley has been for forever a big proponent and supporter of whistleblowers and how important they are, which, you know, ought to be a conservative thing because, you know, we don't trust the government. We don't trust the government. Yeah. We don't trust the government to tell us everything. We're skeptical of the government, we conservatives. And so we don't want to discourage people from coming out and telling us when maybe the government did something wrong. Maybe the whistleblower is wrong. Maybe the whistleblower is full of shit. Maybe the whistleblower is mistaken, or maybe he's right. But we want to know what the whistleblower has to say so that we can ask questions about it. And he basically blew it all off. And not only that, apparently it was National Whistleblowers Day this week.
Yeah, there were a lot of them. A lot of them. I guess so.
It's unbelievable. I mean,
for Bove? Is there another figure? So I guess this is my question. Like, is it unprecedented that a guy this corrupt and this, like, superficially should not be allowed near an appellate seat? Or is it like, hey, every administration has two or three guys like this that they get onto the court? It always is like this, and don't worry about it. Like, it's not the end of the world.
I mean, I can't say that there haven't been people in the past who have been confirmed with, despite not being spotless. But this one, I can't remember anything quite this bad. I mean, this guy wouldn't have gotten the time of day in the first Trump administration. He wouldn't have gotten the time of day in any Republican administration before. But now we have the autocratic government where everything is what Dear Leader wants. And if Dear Leader wants something, we're just gonna close our minds and our eyes and our ears to anything bad that contradicts any proposition that's being advanced by the autocrat. And, obviously that's not consistent with the oaths that members of Congress take not to any individual, but to the Constitution and laws of the United States. It's just more of the appalling disavowal of responsibility that members of Congress have been engaging in for years, starting with the impeachment during the first.
So Bove is only 43 or 44 years old. He's really young.
Yeah.
That's like, he's got 30 years.
Yeah.
To screw around on the bench.
Yes.
And cause damage.
No, he can't cause that much damage to be perfectly clear. He can't cause that much damage as one member of a multi-member court, okay, intermediate appellate court. I mean, I forget how many active circuit judges there are in the Third Circuit, but they're probably at least 10 or 12, okay, or something on that order. And they sit in panels of three, and then if one panel goes off and does something that the rest of the court doesn't like, then they can hear cases en banc, as they say, which is the entire active membership of a court. So he can do not so much damage as an individual. If you had two or three Emil Boves on the Third Circuit, that would be a problem. The real problem is, and I think your question is leading up to that, he's got a lot of time to be appointed to a higher judicial office.
Like what kind, George?
There's this big building across the street from the Congress.
Oh.
It's like one of the fanciest courthouses in the country.
Yeah, it's got lions or something out front of it.
Got this big plaza, and there are nine of them who sit there, and they get a say over it.
We don't have any vacancies coming up, probably, do we, on that court?
I would not have been surprised to have seen one this June, but we did not. You have Alito, who I think likes being a justice, but I think it's well known in town. In fact, I personally heard her say this in 2017. His wife just absolutely despises and hates Washington, hates it here, feels isolated. So he's not, you know, I mean, he could be persuaded to go back. You know, he might be persuadable to leave the bench. I don't know. I forget how old he is, but he's gotten up there. And then you've got CT, Clarence Thomas, who he's always been pissing and moaning to people privately about staying on the bench. And one of the tasks of some of the conservative legal establishment types in town is basically trying to keep him happy so that he will stay, which became particularly...
Dollar bills, y'all.
Well, not necessarily dollar bills. I mean, recreational vehicles. I don't know. I don't know. Who knows? Let's assume we're going to have a legitimate, full-fledged, competitive midterm election in 2026, and let's assume that things are going the way they are continuing to go, and Trump is highly unpopular and consistent with what normally happens in midterm elections when a party that has the White House has a thin majority, they could, you know, lose the Congress. Yeah. You would think that one of these two would, or maybe both, would seriously consider. I think they should have seriously considered it this year, but I don't know why they
didn't.
You want
to have those confirmation fights as close to the election as possible if you're Trump.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
I guess that's true. Unless we are living in a world where there is just 0% chance of Democrats taking the Senate, both of those guys retire next summer.
Yeah. And I would bet money, if that's true, and then that's a reasonable play, a much better play than betting on Republican United States senators to do the right thing. You'll see Beauvais nominated. And if you get two, I mean, you're going to see Beauvais
and Cannon.
Yes. No, you laugh, but that's, I would put a large sum of money on
two justice parlay.
I would walk into the, I don't know if they put a sports book on this at Caesars in Las Vegas, I would put a fuckload of money on that.
God help us. I have a norms question for you. Let's pretend it is 2029 and there's a Democratic president and a Democratic Congress. And Beauvais is simply, he's not on the Supreme Court yet. He is simply sitting on the Third Circuit. Should Democrats try to remove him from the bench?
You know, that's an interesting question. I mean, there's this whole debate about whether impeachment can involve some act that's committed prior to taking office. I think that this would probably be covered by the arguable exception to the rule, in the sense that, you know, he lied to get confirmed.
Right.
So, I mean, I think you could take the position that he could be impeached, and make that case. Well, we'll have to see. I mean, there's one famous case about a judge who committed crimes while as a state court judge. Then he got put on the bench. This is like the late 1800s or early 1900s. Onto the federal district court, I think, in Pennsylvania. And he was impeached and removed for his corruption as a state court judge.
I vaguely remember this. Yeah,
It came up during one or more of the Trump impeachments. It was cited as precedent for something or other. So yeah, I think a case could be made.
Last Beauvais question. what is life like for an appellate judge? By which I mean, how collegial is it, right? So he's one of, I don't know, 10 judges on the circuit, give or take. Are the other judges gonna like shun him and be like, dude, we fucking hate you, you should
leave? Is he gonna
just be treated like a normal colleague that everyone wants to get along with, and he'll just pretend that good old Emil, you know, he's one of us now?
I can tell you how, if I were on the Third Circuit, I mean, I would basically, obviously he's a member of my court, he is legitimately confirmed. I may not like that fact, but I'm going to keep my mouth shut about that, and I'm going to basically decide cases the way I think they should be decided, and hopefully persuade him when I sit with him that we're to decide the cases accordingly. And if he writes a dissent, if we disagree, we'll have a disagreement. I'm not going to be his buddy. We're not going to go out to lunch every day or something like that. But you know, I'd have to, for the sake of it would be my duty as a judge to basically work with him because he's lawfully a judge too. I wouldn't enjoy it.
I was not asking from the deciding point I just meant from the social, from the human element of whether or not you said that, like Thomas is always complaining about how miserable his life is.
Yeah, but Thomas, people, they actually like Thomas. He's a likable guy. Right.
And I guess that's right.
It's right. No, it's true. I mean, you know, they don't have personal issues with. It may be different with Alito. Okay, I don't know. But there can be substantial collegiality among judges who have vastly different views. Justice Ginsburg and Justice Scalia used to go to the Kennedy Center a lot to see operas.
But that's different than I'm a conservative. You're a liberal is different than. I'm a liberal, and I think that fuck the courts. We don't have to obey judicial decisions.
Well,
or maybe not.
I don't think he's going to be palsy-walsy with any of them. And given what has been described as his personality, it wouldn't happen anyway, regardless of how he got to the Third Circuit. I mean, he was widely considered when he was an assistant United States attorney to be basically an asshole. And we have seen more recently how he treated his subordinates in his job as the associate attorney general. Or was it deputy? I forget what his actual position was, but he was not well liked anywhere. Because
hard to imagine.
Yeah.
You look at him and he just looks like the kind of guy who has a lot of friends.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
So we had the perfect bookend to what happened this week with Emil Beauvais was Pam Bondi going after Judge Boasberg, in which he, during a closed door meeting with judicial counsel, I think the Chief Justice was running a little breakout session and asked people, you know, what concerns are top of mind? And Judge Boasberg said, boy, I'm a little bit concerned about the Trump administration not adhering to court decisions. And this seems like something we ought to keep top of mind. This is something the Chief Justice himself has spoken about publicly recently. Right. And is something that the new judge on the Third Circuit actually told people and his employee not to do. He said, don't respect, fuck the courts is what he said. Anyway, the attorney general said that Boasberg saying this is unacceptable. And so she has issued a complaint requesting censure.
This is one of the most, Pam Bondi has done many asinine things, including saying that Donald Trump has saved a quarter of a billion people from fentanyl.
Many would say.
This is pretty much up there with the worst of them. And it's there because, look, these meetings are called the Judicial Conference of the United States, all right? And what they do is they get the Chief Justice together with people from all the federal judicial circuits from Maine to Guam, and they have a meeting talking about what's going on in the courts and the administration of justice and how things can be improved and do you have any issues? And one of the issues at this breakout meeting, a breakfast meeting, was, what the Chief Justice asked these district judges, the district judge memberships, like, hey, what's going on? Anything on your mind? And Boasberg wasn't just answering for himself there. He says, my colleagues and I, referring to his fellow judges in the District of Columbia, who are bearing the brunt of these cases being brought because the Trump administration won't obey the law to begin with, and then they're lying to the courts, as we'll probably get to another thing about that.
Oh, yeah, that's coming.
They're lying to the courts. The whole Rouhani whistleblower complaint letter about Bove talks about basically how they misled Boasberg on like day one, that Saturday night when they were, they were hauling off people to El Salvador.
Yep.
And they were asked point blank by the judge, are you doing this? And they lied. And, it's a real top of mind thing for federal judges. And if you frankly go and you talk to federal judges privately and you say, they're just like, oh gosh, I don't want to have one of these cases. This is terrible. This is like, what do we do? And you can't blame them because they can't do their jobs. And that kind of goes to the whole purpose of these meetings, which is to talk about the administration of justice. I mean, this is more than, do we have too many immigration appeals from the Board of Immigration Appeals? Or are our dockets too heavy? Or what about courthouse security, which is important? Mm-hmm. I mean, this goes to whether or not we have a functioning court system in a nation that abides by the rule of law. So, yes, it's a legitimate concern. The other thing about it is they perpetrated these remarks in this complaint as some kind as public. They're not wasn't public. This was the most discreet. This was basically a 20 people in a closed room talking to the Chief Justice of the United States, who was asking them questions. And the Chief Justice didn't say. I mean, we don't have the full description of what happened at this breakfast, but.
All we have are notes that were taken.
We have some notes, or somebody's
memo. Nobody destroyed the notes, George.
Somebody took notes and then wrote a memo, probably to their colleagues back home, which is a legitimate thing because they're kind of acting as delegates for their colleagues. Like if I'm the district judge in Utah and I'm in the Ninth Circuit or something, and my colleagues in Nevada and Montana will want to know what was said, so I probably send them a memo. That we had this fruitful discussion and this was raised and da da da. But let's leave, apart from that, it's just a perfectly legitimate conversation to have, and it was held in private. And it wasn't, there's nothing in there. I mean, I could see if Boasberg went out and gave a speech tomorrow talking about how terrible things were in a case that's still pending before him, that might fall under the rubric of judicial misconduct, but this was a total private remark. It wasn't even that specific. And he was conveying the viewpoints of his fellow colleagues on an issue of judicial administration that the Chief Justice was asking about. I mean, it is so completely freaking insane. It's outrageous. And what it is the only perk. Look, what's going to happen is the complaint goes to the Chief Judge of the circuit, who was probably there, or he was certainly a member of the judicial conference. I don't know whether he was there for that breakfast. And they're going to dismiss it because it's so freaking stupid. But here's what they're doing with that. They're doing two things with the federal judiciary. I mean, three things. One is they're blowing them off and lying to them. The second thing they're doing is they're attacking them, essentially threatening them because they've talked about impeaching judges who follow the law. This one is, in some ways, as bad, if not worse, This is an attempt to delegitimize judges who rule against the Trump administration, notwithstanding the fact that the Trump administration is basically refusing to obey the law and the Constitution of the United States in countless respects. This is classic authoritarianism. You want to delegitimize any criticism inside or outside the government. You want to disarm and disable a co-equal branch of government. And they're doing it by basically, it's sort of an extension of what Stephen Miller has been doing when he's talking about these communist judges. This now is that the Attorney General of the United States is putting her imprimatur on these criticisms of judges and these illegitimate criticisms. Instead of, obeying her obligation, which she swore to uphold the constitutional laws of the United States, she's basically tendentiously and misleadingly attacking through the judicial complaint process a judge who's just expressing concern about the fact that the government won't obey the law privately. It is unbelievable and
so
outrageous.
So you know judges.
Yeah.
Like you know judges personally. You've been around them. So I guess the big question is, are the type of people who are federal judges likely to be intimidated by this or to get their Irish up?
They're likely to be. They are pissed already. Okay. They are pissed. And you can see it in some of these opinions. You could see it even in some of the opinions of the Supreme Court, where particularly that case that came out of Texas, where they were being gaslit. Now, again, the Trump administration has won a bunch of things in front of them. Mm-hmm. I think they're trying to play their cards carefully. I mean, there's a debate about what exactly it is the Supreme Court is doing and why and whether it's a good idea. But, some of those opinions don't really express a lot of pleasure with how the government is conducting business. And you see that not just there, you see it in district courts throughout the country. And it's not about policy. It's about these judges feel they're being lied to. And if they can't trust, normally the government gets a lot of leeway in court because the government, it is sort of the primary litigant in the federal courts.
Right.
And these are public servants and they're acting on behalf of the people and they don't, generally they don't lie. Generally they're honest to the courts and they're the first people, frankly, to get in trouble if they're not honest with the courts because judges expect so much from them. I mean, there's nothing worse, my experience from talking about people who've litigated before judges in the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York in Manhattan, there is nothing worse when a federal district judge there who was once a member of a U.S. attorney's office, the U.S. attorney's office there, comes across an assistant United States attorney who they think is not playing it straight. They get really, really offended. They get really offended when government lawyers don't play things straight. And that's an example of like one unique office, but it's true of federal judges all across the country. They expect more from government lawyers than they expect from private practitioners for obvious reasons. And they're outraged by this.
Is Pam Bondi going to pay any price for doing this sort of thing? Like, is there any professional price to be paid for her? Because someday she won't be attorney general anymore. She'll be, I guess private practice, or she'll be, getting appointed to a bunch of corporate boards to make money.
Well, if she's getting appointed to a bunch of corporate boards and if she has any value in private practice, 4 or 5 years from now, that's a country we don't want to live in.
Okay. Well.
Okay. I mean, that's basically what it comes down to.
Yeah.
Because we don't recover from where we are now if these people aren't cast out of public life.
I got bad news for you, George.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
All right, George, I guess we'll go to the mirror view of the Pam Pontiac action, which is that this week the Legal Accountability Center filed with grievance committees of a bunch of bar associations for three government attorneys, Eric Hamilton, Brad Rosenberg, Liam Holland, and basically said that these guys have lied to the courts, which I guess is the functional equivalent of they should have their wrists slapped or be disbarred or something. I don't know, but just looking for some form of accountability at the bar level for lawyers who are acting in ways that lawyers aren't supposed to act. Is this real?
Could something good happen? I do think it's real. This group, the Legal Accountability group, is associated with, I think it overlaps some of the personnel involved with that overlap with something called the 65 Project, which you may have heard about. And the 65 mm-hmm. Project was basically an organization that brought disciplinary complaints against the lawyers who perpetrated some of the bullshit January 6th or the bullshit 2020 election fraud cases, including Rudy Giuliani and John Eastman and all the usual suspects there. And they had actually quite remarkable success in getting a number of people either suspended or disbarred or settling. There was that woman out in Colorado, the dingbat, whose name I forget. I mean, there were a whole bunch of them. And these are the same people running basically just doing the same thing now to government attorneys in a situation where, as we were just discussing, the government attorneys have been lying to the court one way or the other. And what's interesting, I think, about this is I looked up these. I haven't seen the complaint yet. The New York Times story about this did not link to the complaint, and it wasn't yet posted on the organization's website. But you have a deputy assistant attorney general who's a political appointee is the first name in that list. Eric Hamilton. And then the other two were not political appointees. They were line attorneys, okay, basically following orders. I mean, this is kind of that's more important than holding the political appointees to account.
You've got to create jeopardy for these people. Right.
Right. The senior people can be rewarded by Trump. CEG, Emil Bove, right? These little guys got to worry about whether or not they're blowing their careers for these people. And I think it's part of the problem that they're having now in the Justice Department. There was an article about this in the last couple of weeks, is they don't have enough people to litigate stuff now because line attorneys are leaving in droves. Precisely, but first of all, it's unpleasant to work there because they wanted to do something right, but now they're being called upon to support things that violate the law. And they're terrified also that they're going to be forced or urged or forced to do things that could cause them to lose their law licenses permanently.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's actually important. I mean, I'm not going to say I feel sorry for the two line attorneys because they did whatever they did. And I haven't read the complaint, in fairness. But those people need to be held responsible too. I mean, it's not a defense to a disciplinary action that you were just following orders. If you lie to a federal judge, it doesn't matter who gave that order.
Hey, guys, this turned out to be a monster, super-sized episode. The two of us went on an absolute epic tear about all sorts of stuff. George, in rare form today. For the rest of the show, you got to join us. Become a member. come subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Substack and get the rest of the show with us. Let's ride together.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.